I'm Dr. Amy French, and our moment in time this month takes us back to 1920, when Tennessee became the 36th state to ratify the 19th Amendment, giving women the vote and changing the American political landscape. The law had been a long time in the making. In 1848, women from around the nation, including Elizabeth Stanton and Lucretia Mott, convened in Seneca Falls, New York, to discuss women's rights, or rather, the lack thereof. In many states, married women couldn't own property or keep their earnings. A woman did not have a separate legal existence from her husband. If she was married, she was considered one with her husband, and his vote would represent the both of them. Women still paid taxes, though, single or married. Since they couldn't vote, they were taxed without representation. As revolutionaries had done several decades before, they demanded a voice in their government. The women left Seneca Falls having created a declaration of sentiments outlining their political position. The document began, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal." Suffragists tried different tactics to get the vote, state by state and federal amendment. The state by state campaign was slow going, but started to gain momentum at the turn of the century. By 1899, there were suffrage associations in every state. By 1912, 9 Western states had enfranchised women, but a younger generation of activists were not satisfied that the vote was being gained fast enough. Alice Paul held a show-stopping parade in D.C. in 1913. Dressed in all white astride a white horse, Inez Mill Holland led a group that included 5,000 marchers, 24 floats, 9 bands, and 4 mounted brigades. Sadly, the marchers were attacked and 100 were taken to a local hospital. Such chaos broke out that the Secretary of War authorized the use of the cavalry to help control the crowd. Meanwhile, Woodrow Wilson, who was to be inaugurated the following day, arrived in Washington to surprisingly little fanfare. Little did he know at the time that suffrage was to become a major issue of his presidency. Alice Paul and her close colleagues broke with the National American Woman's Suffrage Association and created the National Woman's Party. They picketed the White House, standing in front of the presidential mansion with signs stating things such as, "Mr. President, how long must women wait for liberty?" When World War I broke out, their actions became even more controversial, but the women did not stand down. As Alice Paul noted, women had given up the cause of suffrage during the Civil War and gotten nowhere. The women resumed their post in front of the White House with signs that were more critical of the president and his concern for Germany's democracy, but not that of half the American population. They were promptly arrested and sentenced to a workhouse. Those arrested considered themselves political prisoners. While there, some were treated quite shabbily. The government had a public relations nightmare on their hands. In January of 1918, Wilson made women's enfranchisement a war measure, stating before Congress, "We have made partners of the women in this war. Shall we admit them only to a partnership of suffering and sacrifice and toil, and not to a partnership of privilege and right?" Over 2 years later, Congress was on the cusp of action. Those who were pro-suffrage wore yellow roses in their lapel, while anti-suffragists sported red roses. By a quick tally, it looked like the measure would be deadlocked. But overcoming all odds, the 19th Amendment was ratified by a one-vote margin. Whose vote changed American women's destiny? A 24-year-old senator from Tennessee, Harry Byrne. On August 26, 1920, the 19th Amendment was officially adopted, and the right of U.S. citizens to vote would never again be denied or abridged on account of their sex. I'm Dr. Amy French, and This Moment in Time is a production of the Delta College History Department in cooperation with Delta College Public Radio.